Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. We have a special live recording for you from Balticon 44. Before we get into the story, here is a brief message from our sponsor. If you provide technical support to clients, colleagues, friends, or family, have you found an easy, cost-effective way without being there in person? The best way to provide technical support is to do it online with GoToAssist Express. Help friends and clients learn how to use new software and fix family computer problems without being there in person. GoToAssist Express lets you easily view and control any other computer online so you can quickly resolve technical issues. Whether you're in customer support, technical consultation, or management, or just a computer guru, GoToAssist Express will help you. Increase revenue, reduce travel and support time, and service more clients. Brought to you by Citrix, you know GoToAssist Express will be easy and secure. Our listeners can try GoToAssist Express free for 30 days. For this special offer, visit GoToAssist.com/techpodcast. That's visit GoToAssist.com/techpodcast. This story was recorded in front of a live audience at Balticon 44 in Baltimore, Maryland, May 28, 2010. It was written by Matt Wallace specifically for me to read at Balticon. We hope you enjoy it. Now, on to our story. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer, producer of Variant Frequencies. And I'm going to present to you today an original story written by Matt Wallace specifically for me for Balticon. It's going to be a bit short because I originally thought I was going to be here for 30 minutes. But they ended up telling me I'm not here for an hour. So we'll see. I don't think we're going to be here a full hour unless I read really slow. But I don't think you want that either. But let's just get into the story. A World Made of Wax by Matt Wallace. Right now, the world is lit up like everyone in it had the same brilliant idea at once. It's so bright, you'd think the light came from within if you couldn't look up and see every individual curl of flame on the surface of the sun. Although you'd only see it for the briefest millisecond if you tried. We started hearing whispers when I was a boy. Mostly science speak. The kind of news most people ignore or don't understand, or both. The ice caps had been melting for what seemed like centuries. The ozone layer wasn't even sticky film on a mostly forgotten memory. None of it had ever been felt. Not among the everyday tangle of our very normal lives. The idea that we were somehow moving closer to the sun, with every turn seemed like just another theory. And even if it was true, surely it would be something that not even our 7 times great-grandchildren would end up dealing with. My family and I were spending the day at the beach. My mother held me under a bright orange umbrella and read to me. I was fair-skinned, and she was overprotective. And her neurosis saved my tiny life that day, without even meaning to. The sand was hot, but suddenly it turned to burning coals and began to steam. The surf started to boil, and the gull song was strangled by the blistery screams of women, children, and even grown men. I saw eyes stricken with milky blindness that day. I saw boils burst on uncomprehending faces. I saw skin hang from bone in frozen, waxy droplets. I saw panic and terror and pain, and flame birthed from thin air, attaching itself to the tiniest scraps of cloth and fattiest patches of flesh. That was the day fire entered my world. That was the day the sun stopped giving life and started taking it, reclaiming it, some would say. It's close now. So close. Every day it seems to inch closer. The sun rolls over the landscape in waves that stretch the entire length of the horizon, rising so high you can't crane your neck far enough to see blue above it. It would be beautiful if you could look at it unfiltered and unafraid. There are even days you forget the larger implications, when you watch the rays flashing against conductors the size of cities, freezing and refreezing the oceans. I worked on one in the Baltic Sea, under 18 layers of UV filters. Screens that are pitch black until the sun hits them, and then everything above you becomes magic hour. A false sky that would remind the old men of evenings that once were. If there were any old men left. We all exist under and behind and inside veneers now. The sidewalks are filled with shiny chem suits carrying UV parasols, like some animatronic Victorian diorama, where everything is painted silvers. Windows have become black holes. We don't see the world. We hide from it. All of those veneers are little more than security blankets thrown over a birdcage. They can't stop the drawing, the irresistible pull, or its effects as if we move closer towards our center. I've seen solar flares reach out like arms of flame, and for a moment the entire atmosphere is possessed of fire and something that's not quite a hand and not quite a tendril, and somehow both steals toward the Terra. Sometimes it's a house. And sometimes it's a neighborhood. And sometimes it's a city. They strike randomly, unless you believe angry gods live in that fire. More and more do. Eventually, they found a way to speed the turning of the earth, moving us faster to slow the process. You learn to accept the world slowly burning alive. She and I both learned to live with it, learned to live in it day to day, at least for a while. People seemed drawn in those days with the same irresistible pull the earth was feeling. We were two of them. She was a willowy nothing of a thing. When I met her, I thought a hard sweat would dry her out and she'd break apart on the spot. But when the mad came on and she balled her fists and the muscles in her arms pulled taut, she lashed out with shocking strength. As hard as the light had become, you often stopped noticing faces, especially in passing. But her eyes could flare so hot they managed to stand out. I told her she had eyes so big that nothing could hide in them. She asked if that was a racial comment, using jokes to deflect the truth the way the wounded often do. We'd both given up the grind, decided there was no more time left for it. The Lunar Archive had been established years ago, and now they were offloading its contents onto a massive array of probe modules to be shot far from the solar system, deep into space where the cold still lived to preserve it. We were both going to leave something behind. I was going to write something true, something meaningful, something not full of shit. She was going to capture something in pixels and grain that was worthy, Neither of us could decide what to focus on with our work. But for a while, taking the trip together and trying to figure it out pulled us into one another. She broke first. Gradually, she lost all interest in soil-bound things. More and more, I saw her worshiping the sun. Solar psychosis, they call it. It affects one in every four people. A higher percentage among women for some reason. She started stepping out, barefoot and barely clad. I pulled her back in, skin burned red and eyes melting, and she swore to me she'd be consumed by it whether I understood or not, whether I'd join her or not. Still, I tried to keep her tethered. I tried drugs. I tried everything, including a 24-hour vigil, but after days, the exhaustion conquered the stimulants I shot and snorted and imbibed. I slept. And even in my dreams, I knew she was gone. The note she left me was just a picture of baked granite stabbing the sky. Words were always mine, and she never had much use for them. The mountains were where the burning children went, the sacrificial fire disciples who had let the rays fry whatever logic and sense of reality was left from their brains. They'd accepted their journey into the center of those flames. They longed only for that embrace, and went to the top of the desert mountains seeking it. I shouldn't have, but I followed her there. I doubled up on my chem suits and asbestos linings, the black market stuff, whose only advantage is killing you far slower than the sun will. It was a lot like walking on another planet up there in the peaks. An angry, molten, alien surface. I was hours late to the brief summit rave that began as a party and ended as a suicidal ritual of stripping down and standing exposed. I'd never know which pile of ash and black tar she'd left behind. There were dozens, perfectly preserved. None scattered as there were no winds left to do it. The air had stopped moving, everywhere it seemed. Machines were the only means to pump it into motion now. And there were none up there so close to the glaring sea. I stopped there for until the heat ate through my first layer of chem suit and then retreated. Although for a moment, and probably longer, I considered letting that last layer of protection, of false veneer, melt away too. I stopped writing for a long time after that. I was content to sit in the shadows and wait and ponder the earth spinning like a spastic lottery wheel. And wherever it finally stopped, those people would be the lucky ones, whether they knew it or not. The rest of us would have to remain in the shadows, waiting. And that was worse. I became so certain about that. Then I woke up this morning, and the pitch-dark film that had long ago replaced panes of glass in every household was melting, like a vinyl record on a kiln. The temperature indoors was climbing to new heights. For the first time, I wore my chem suit inside with the coolant system running at full capacity. And I decided I'd leave more than ash and sticky tar, whether it was worthy or not. I was just thinking everything we made and everything we were made of was meant to burn and boil and melt. We built on mud, literally. We're made of the same stuff. There shouldn't be any surprise, any bitterness. We make gods that are both creators and destroyers for a reason. And just like when I sat in my mother's lap under that umbrella, I'd like to feel the sun on my skin just once. The end. Well, for those of you who came in late, I only had a short story, very short story prepared because I thought I only had half an hour. And turns out I have a full hour. I don't think we're going to fill it up, but I hope you guys enjoyed it. And I can answer questions if you have any questions about me, about variant frequencies. Can't answer much about the story. I wish Matt was here to answer anything like that, but...
That's the kind of story I think it might be a good idea to digest it before bringing up the questions.
Well, Matt Wallace stories tend to be that way.
So, Rick, what kind of preparation do you do before you do the readings for the podcast? How much rehearsal do you do before?
It depends on how complex the language is. For Matt Wallace stories, I have to practice a bit more because Matt tends to kind of do tongue twisters.
Yeah, I
can't tell you the number of times when I've recorded other people doing Matt Wallace stories where they would go, "Damn you, Matt!" Because he can make it a real challenge to get it all out without stumbling all over it. I did pretty good on this one, but I practiced it quite a bit since I knew I was going to do it live. I don't worry about it so much when I'm recording the podcast at home because I can always stop and redo it and edit it. And I spend a lot of time editing. That's one thing about variant frequencies is it does take me a long time to edit each episode. And especially when I start putting the music in and sound effects. And then when you have multiple voices, then it really gets complex. So I usually read through it two or three times at the most before I start recording. Yes?
I heard a really filthy, dirty rumor that variant frequencies is ending soon.
Yes.
And I was wondering if...
I refuse to believe.
There will be a giant hole of awesomeness, you know, just a hole of it. Not something needs to fill there. What are you going to be doing after that? Do you have any other projects coming up?
I don't at the moment. Right now, I'm going to just kind of take a pause from podcasting. Although, if somebody has something short, or, you know, they want me to read for them, I'll be happy to do that. I can, because that's easier to fit in than trying to produce my whole podcast of my own, especially since mine tends to be more complex than just reading for somebody. I have been asked to do one short thing for Ken Crawford that I'll be doing because I don't know if you guys are familiar with Ken's Dead Hunt. But I got the wonderful honor of doing the voice of the scientist who accidentally causes the zombie outbreak for that one. So that was fun. So he's going to be doing a little bit more with that. So I'm going to get to do some of that. So that'll be fun. So that's it for now. And you never know when I might get the bug to do more variant frequencies. We'll see. That's the great thing about podcasting is I can always come back and nobody can stop me.
So. For what it's worth, I can say that just as one of you, Avatar, said that you can see every dollar that was spent there on the screen, every minute put into a variant frequency show is there.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much.
You raised the bar considerably for production.
Well, when we started, there was no bar. We started in January of 2006. You know, I think most of you here know the history of how variant frequencies started and why it started. The whole point of it was to promote my wife Anne and our friend Matt Wallace, and it was all meant to get them noticed and get their stuff out there. Being able to actually produce the podcast and do the voice work was just a bonus for me, actually. I've always tried to not make it the Rick Stringer show. I really didn't want it to be that. I tried to pull back from that a little bit more because I really didn't want it to focus just on me. The Rick Stringer Show. I need writers for that. That's one. Yeah.
Well, I think you know a couple.
I know one or two. Yeah. So that's a thought too. But thank you, Michael. Anything else?
How much of an impact have you had on, or direction have you had on the music that was in the show?
Oh well, all of the music has been a combination of many things. It started out just me using, I have an electronic keyboard that I plug into my computer and I use GarageBand. And in the first year, it was all me just mixing stuff with GarageBand. You know, a lot of the, you know, what I like to call music clip art. Yeah, but it works, you know, if you mix it right. I think of myself more as an arranger than a musician. I don't know how to play piano, and I sort of know how to play the guitar, and would be able to attest to how sort of that is. But with the kind of stuff that I try to do in the podcast, all I had to do was find these really cool, eerie sounds and make the music that way. And then as time went on, then I started using stuff from musicians that had contacted me, wanted me to use their music. So there were a couple of that I did that way. And then I started using some from Digital Juice, which I really, really like their stuff because I can take that and use the different tracks and mix it and arrange it and make new stuff out of these things that already existed. And then, you know, of course, any longtime listener also knows that I'm a big fan of Abney Park, and we've used a lot of their music, and they've been wonderful about letting me use their stuff. They're just great guys, and that's the music that I didn't have much influence on, obviously. But that's how it went. Oh yes, well of course, Neil, my son Neil, he created the theme music for the Fail Cities Monologues, and it's funny is he never felt like that was really a complete thing, and we even had somebody asking us for the soundtrack from the Failed Cities, and Neil goes, but that's not a song. He goes, it's just this riff. He's but I love it. You know, from the first time I heard that piece of music, I thought, that's it. I got to use that. And there's also been a couple of other podcast episodes where he did create some riffs that we used. Like there was the one, one of Matt Wallace's story. Leanne Mabry did the, I'm having trouble remembering the name of it.
Goes back to school.
Yeah, yep. And we had the wonderful Matthew Wayne Selznick playing the devil. And oh my God, did he make a great devil. So yes. Yeah. Can't forget Neil. All right. I guess we're done, folks. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you. Thank you for listening to A World Made of Wax, written by Matt Wallace and narrated by Rick Stringer. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at variantfrequencies.com. If you like what you've heard here on Variant Frequencies, please tell your friends. Thank you from all of us at Variant Frequencies.